Today's episode is brought to you by Hyundai and the 2022 Tucson and Santa Fe plug-in hybrid EVs. Learn more about the widest range of electrified vehicles at HyundaiUSA.com. That's HyundaiUSA.com. Well, in the first half, we'll talk about Newsom running for president. We'll also break down some movies I've seen, Brian's seen, Gina's seen, and speaking of movies, Richard Roper, famous film reviewer, is going to join the show to talk about movies. We'll do that right after this.
I'm Dave Detman, also known as Dr. Gadget. I've got a new podcast called The Big Idea, and every week I talk to inventors and visionaries who made it big in their respective industries. We'll tackle weekly trending tech, provide inside tips for your success, and go deep dives on the latest and greatest innovations. And I know you're going to love this part. I'll also have plenty of free giveaways. Who doesn't love free stuff? So listen to and follow The Big Idea with me, Dr. Gadget, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast One, and wherever you get your podcasts.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is The Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, comedian Bill Bellamy, and film critic for the Chicago Sun-Times, Richard Roper. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, and now, a man who's not into hand-washing or hand-wringing, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. The choice to get it on. Mandate to get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to some friend. Love that about you. Right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Bald Brian?
We're coming to your town. We'll help you party it down.
Dawson, isn't it we'll help you party down?
You know, I actually looked up the lyrics to be sure before I said that, because it is one of the most misunderstood, possibly, lyrics in rock and roll. The lyric page that I picked up, it said, we'll help you party it down.
Really? It does say that on the lyrics.
Your town, we'll help you party.
I never heard that.
Yeah.
I heard party down.
Yeah. You know what else I heard the other day? Here's something interesting. You know the Argent song, Hold Your Head Up.
I hate that song.
Hold Your Head Up, Whoa. You almost thought it was Whoa.
Yeah. Hold Your Head Up.
A lot of people saying it's Woman.
Woman.
Argent said it in an interview.
I didn't think it was Whoa. I didn't know what it was, but it was something.
It was Whoa.
I thought it was Boy.
Whoa.
Whoa. All right. Let's see. Stuff to get into. I had a weird moment. I was home watching TV late last night and just landed on the channel and Leave It to Beaver came on.
Oh, prescient.
And I was just looking at it.
It's a new era of the Adam Carolla Show.
I can talk about this all day. I've seen every episode.
And it's weird because sitcoms were, you know, like commercials are kind of a slice of Americana, you know, it's sort of where we're at or where we want you to go. And, you know, Friends is very much different than Leave It to Beaver. But what? Leave It to Beaver was sort of the gold standard of this is where we're at, you know. And the dad would be
Hugh Beaumont.
They would come home. It was funny. You'd come home and you'd get out of your jacket and tie and into a cardigan.
Mr. Rogers.
Kind of like a dress cardigan.
Yeah, and your house coat.
Yeah.
You'd sit down. A house coat is like a bathrobe.
A frock.
Oh, are they way different?
No, this
a
is
house,
a house. I don't know the difference.
A house coat
it's
is
like a robe.
Is another name for a robe. I think
it's like a big flurry nightgown with buttons down the front.
Okay,
that's a house coat.
He would get into a cardigan and he would sit down and he would read the paper. And in this particular episode,
Larry Mondello, Lumpy.
No, not Lumpy. There's Beaver and his brother
Tony Dow.
Anyway,
R.I.P.
He was going. He was going out on a date to like meet the parents.
Wally
was going out, and his whole character was sort of like he would just go like he'd come home and they'd be like the parents were both waiting. So how'd it go? Mm-hmm. And did you meet the family? And it's like I don't know. And he'd go, how was it? Good. And how was meeting the family? Good. And how was your girlfriend? I guess it was good. He would just say, like, I guess it was. And I was sort of looking at this character, and I was like, I don't really know that he's that well defined, other than he's just this guy who wants to get along and not really have conversations in a sitcom. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a weird conceit for a character. It didn't really have an angle or anything. It was like, I guess it was okay. And that was like the running joke. And how was the food? It was okay, I guess. And then how was the day? Okay, I guess. And then like, Wally, come on. And he'd be like, okay, I guess. And then he'd go, can I go up to the guy leave now? Well, yeah. And he'd like leave. And I was just looking at him going, man, it's a weird character. And then I got up this morning and he was dead.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you killed him.
Tony Dow. And I remember, I was thinking to myself, is he still alive? I wonder how old he is. I wonder what he looks like now. And I was just sitting there thinking that last night at 12:30 at night. And then this morning I get up and he's gone. I don't watch Leave It to Beaver that much. It was just sort of on when I turned the TV on. But I do think it's a good idea to study us. And, you know, you can go to a museum and see how we lived, or you can just turn on the TV and see how we lived.
And just doing the math, because this always kills me, that was, let's say, the mid-50s. Mm-hmm. The Beave is supposed to be, let's say, 10. Wally's 13 or 14. The parents look like they're in their mid-60s from our standards.
Old. The adult, yes, we've talked about it. It's not the Real Housewives of Orange County with hair extensions and skinny jeans. It is
a fit and flare dress with a petticoat.
Short hair.
Short
women,
hair.
Women did not. It was scandalous to wear your hair long after the age of 34.
You look like a streetwalker.
For a woman?
Yeah.
I mean, that was about it. Yeah. So I we had certain rules and it applied to everyone, and that's just how people rolled back then. So yeah, and he seemed like a 6-year-old guy.
He really did.
I mean, they should have been back then. People had kids in their early 20s.
Yeah, so they were supposed to be late 30s
or mid 30s. I mean, if the Beave was 10, then she should have been 33. But she was like an old aunt. Well, we talked about like Aunt Bee and stuff before. Anyway, the other thing that I keep getting stuck in my craw is everyone is talking about our governor, Gavin Newsom, making a bid for the presidency. And
God, what a coup this would be for you.
People are like,
ever since Vito goes to slip through your fingers.
Yeah.
I know. It's like, is he going to run for president? And I'm assuming yes, but I'm also assuming yes because he says no. Mm-hmm. And so if he said no, I'm not running for president, then I'm assuming he's running for president. But I was thinking back to when I interviewed him all those years ago. And I played a longer version of this on stage, but I wasn't able to get into it with you guys. So the homelessness thing came up, and I forgot that he had told me that homelessness was his thing. That was his subject.
He sure has embraced it.
Yeah. This is, I don't know, nine years ago. Well, he said no one else cared about it, but he did. A decade ago, I then explained who homelessness were. He was still on. I think we've given up the theme of hardworking folks that just got put out.
Bad breaks.
We're now
one paycheck away from the streets.
Yeah, we're now. Again, you don't need to study any graphs or look at any statistics. You get in your car and you drive around and you see clearly insane people walking in circles and defecating on the sidewalk. And you go, that doesn't feel like a Mother 3 to me. But just a 1-minute clip with Gavin Newsom, maybe soon to be President Newsom, and his take on homelessness and then how passionate he is about homelessness, and then we can figure out how effective he's been.
That was my issue, homelessness, and my passionate efforts
to
deal with homeless. That's an issue that no one cares about in this country. I care deeply.
Well, listen, the thing about homeless people is they're either junkies or they're crazy or they're both. This notion of, like, the guy's a hardworking, God-fearing family member who lost his job and now had to take to the streets is total and utter
bullshit.
Yeah,
but what about the picture of real homelessness, which is a poor
mom
with two kids?
He's going to tell me about what really is.
You don't know.
I'm talking about people with mental disorders who are strung out on drugs. He, who's passionate about homeless, is going to explain to me what real the real picture of homelessness.
All right.
The real
total
picture.
Nutter bullshit.
Total nutter bullshit.
Yeah, but what about the picture of real homelessness, which is a poor mom with two kids with a husband who took off and left her, who's sitting there struggling on that minimum wage job, and all of a sudden now is out in the streets and sidewalks desperately trying to find some help, get her life back, can't get those kids into childcare.
I think that's what happened to Jewel.
Can't afford them. That's the tough thing.
Yeah, that's
tough. And that's a picture of family homelessness in this country.
That's a postage stamp. Yeah. That's the picture. How would we – let me ask this. I mean, I know I sound like insane people. How would we solve a problem if we cannot identify the problem?
What the problem is.
Or don't want to, clearly.
If the problem is the mother of three who has a minimum wage job, whose husband left, and who's put out, we have a million services for that young gal.
Yeah.
We have shelters and outreach programs and Meals on Wheels. That person could just slide right into a shelter. Her and her kids get a whole bunch of whatever we pay for as taxpayers. For those people.
Right. Yes.
That is not the face. He's telling me the real face. So in his estimation, there's a problem. He cares about it passionately. Nobody else cares about it. This is 10 years ago. He knows what the real problem is, except for he's completely misidentified the problem for some weird reason. I don't know why it became so politicized. It's just, there are these people. It's like if we politicize termites or something. It's like there's a kind of a termite. They're coming in and they're eating all. That's not the face of termites. It's like, yes, it is.
The face of termites are a beautiful ladybug.
Right. Why are we arguing about this? It's not a political thing.
Well, and my only question to him would be, where do you live and where do you go? Right. Where have you seen this?
And, oh, if I may, Gavin Newsom is, by all objective measures, a good politician. He's been elected the mayor of San Francisco, lieutenant governor of the state, governor of the state. He's in the running for president, perhaps. He is good at being a politician. This is the easiest win for a politician. Just acknowledge the problem, be compassionate, and say, yes, these people are addicts. They have mental issues. They need help. Here are some programs, or here's some forward-looking thing. It's the easiest win, but to keep going back to
deny that it's a problem.
It's not this. It's this much smaller thing. You're hamstringing yourself.
Yes. And then also, then how does this apply to other facets of governing, like shutting down beaches or schools or whatever? I mean, if you can't identify, if there's no cases of outdoor transmission, then why are you shutting the beaches down? I mean, there's a disconnect between whatever your retarded logic is for whatever retarded reasons you have and then whatever you implement.
Well, and he's someone who, you know, he comes from a wealthy family. I know he likes the optics of this state making money. And remember when he refused to even entertain the idea that Disney World was up and running safely?
Right.
Disneyland stays closed. We're like, but you like money in the state, right?
Yeah.
And they're doing it.
I guess they're paying either way.
Yeah.
Well, basically, if he runs for president, I essentially said yesterday on Fox, I said, look, we're taking a guy who manages a Chick-fil-A in Burbank, who's run it into the ground. It's caught fire a few times, health code violations, and the chicken sandwich costs twice as much as it does in the rest of the country. And then saying, we want to take this manager and have him manage all the Chick-fil-A's nationwide.
CEO of Chick-fil-A.
Yes, let's take a guy who's doing a horrible job of managing his state and put him in charge of all the states.
Oh, God. So there was talk, I heard it on the news today, that even though Pence says he's not, you know, he hasn't made anything clear, but he looks like he's given the right answers for a bid. Newsom v. Pence.
Oh, boy.
Oh, wow.
Could you imagine?
That is some lightly toasted white bread.
The two whitest guys. I don't know if you can do that anymore.
Let me throw this question out to you. It's better. You have to think your way around this one, as would anyone, I imagine. But like, Trump was maybe not the most, he wasn't the most dignified statesman, but a lot of people like what he did for the economy, or, you know, the country made money, a 401k, stock market, whatever. California is sitting on an all-time record high budget surplus, right? We made just untold billions of dollars, and they don't even know how to spend it. What do you say to the people who are like, you know, that seems like the flip side of the same coin?
I don't know. I imagine we'll squander it all on pensions, but
Deal with reality in reality's terms. We are rich.
Right. But it's not coming out in the form of schools or potholes or anything. But we have a budget surplus. Now, what we do is we rely on these sort of booms here, like tech and things like that, pot and stuff like that. Then we get this, coffers get filled with this, the next thing. So the question is, I just sort of go, why are all the businesses leaving? Why are they leaving? Why would they want to go? Or why would anyone want to leave anywhere? Why does U-Haul cost, $2,000 out of California and $200 back toward California? Somebody knows something and they're acting on it. I don't know the economics of it. We also pay a shitload in taxes here. I mean, we always talk about this place. There's no income tax. We pay like 14% or 13.7.
Yeah, it's like the old saying, robbing Peter to pay Paul. Like there's surplus because we're getting shucking down more.
But that hasn't changed much though over the last since the Newsom's been governor, right? The last 10 years. Like, why now? Well, I don't know the economics either. I'm asking the question.
I don't know. I mean, having a surplus, I guess, is good, but if it doesn't translate into a transportation, light rail systems, better schools,
cleaner
streets, less homelessness, like I don't know, then it's just a surplus. But I know I'm not answering your question.
How long have we had the surplus? Do you know?
I thought it was as of the last fiscal year.
Okay.
That's been a big deal.
We got a lot of COVID money,
well,
too.
Well, that's what I was going to say. My conspiracy theory is we were handed that money through emergency relief, right?
No, we create a lot of wealth. I think what's happening is we have this chasm between abject poverty and insane wealth.
Indeed.
We have routinely houses in Malibu are over $100 million. There's many of them. There's some are over $200 million. And then we have people flopped in the streets. And I think what we're trying to do, we always talk about the middle class, is sort of work it back toward the middle. But I don't know. Someone will tweet me and explain it better than I can. Either way, that's Gavin Newsom's take on homelessness and what that's the subject he's passionate about. And that was 9 years ago. So here we are. But it also will tell you that whether you're talking about like COVID or whether you're talking about homelessness, you don't really need to listen to the experts. You got to kind of just drive around and look around. Like, my neighborhood has tons of kids. My friends, my kids have tons of friends, and none of them have succumbed to COVID. None of the kids. No one's been dropped by COVID. So they can tell you how dangerous COVID is, but if no one you know and no one in your kids' world has been affected by it, then it's probably not to the size that they're describing it. I was yelling about this with Drew couple hours ago. And homelessness, it's the same thing. I've driven in every corner of this city, and I've never seen Gavin Newsom's unicorn of a mother of three trying to do her best out on the street. I do see crazed people fighting with crutches and who I'm assuming are mentally disabled or junkies. So that I've seen. The other thing about COVID that I was thinking about is yelling about with Drew, which is I always picture it. Richard Roper's coming on, so I always think about it. Let's look at it like a pandemic movie. All the people who've been telling us how dangerous it is for the last 2 years, whether it be the aforementioned Newsom or Garcetti or Barbara Ferrer, the health whatever, L.A. City Council, teachers' unions, every talking head on CNN and everyone who writes a column on in the L.A. Times, how come none of them are dead? Shouldn't they be dead? Shouldn't some of them? I mean, maybe not Anderson Cooper and Don Lemon and Sanjay Gupta, but one of them.
Right.
Shouldn't somebody go, hey, we can't do Joy Reid's show today because she's dead. Because she's dead. And we can't have a city council meeting on masking because two of the city council members got COVID and they're dead. And we can't write a column in the LA Times about how dangerous COVID is for kids because the columnist died. Or the mayor died, or the governor died, or
point
the regional
taken.
Supervisor died. Where are the dead people? Shouldn't I turn on CNN and just, why are all the anchors from 2 years ago still alive when we're in the middle of a fucking deadly pandemic? How come they're not dead?
That's good.
No one's dead. Where are you? All the people told me how deadly it was are not dead. How did that happen? How is this?
I can't explain it.
Bad COVID movie?
That's how you should avoid COVID. Get famous.
Yeah.
Get famous.
Right.
No, you never die.
That's right. So just look around. You don't need to look at the graph. The person that was telling you not to go on the beach at Daytona Beach 2 years ago on CNN is still reporting about something else.
Mm-hmm.
So think about that. All right. We have an old picture. I also have, somebody tweeted me a warning on they had to get a new wooden handle for their sledgehammer. And we always talk about overregulation, how insane it is in California. There's a sticker on the wooden handle.
Oh, boy.
For the axe.
Cancer and reproductive harm. www.p65warnings.ca.gov.
So, like the lacquer they use, I assume?
That's the thing. All of those stickers always go on everything in California.
It's really mind-numbing. Like,
yeah.
You don't even notice it now.
Yeah, every gas station has it on the pump. Everything.
Every pot for a plant, it's all on the bottom.
Well, back to my why isn't everyone on CNN dead theorem, which is how come people aren't just mid swing with a sledgehammer just falling over?
My baby.
Or stories like what happened to Russ? Well, you know, he tried to demo out a cinder block wall and he got one of those handles.
Oh, and it hit
I know
him
the
in
rest.
The head.
Yeah.
So he's not with us anymore.
That old cliche.
Yeah.
We put him, everyone.
We put him down as a COVID death, but either way, it was the axe handle that got him.
Wow.
A clip. So I saw the movie Black Phone.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's with good reviews. Ethan Hawke?
Yes. It was at 100%, and I think it's made its way down to the mid-80s or something.
Is it horror?
Yes, it's horror. It's genre's horror. It's also a time thing. It's like Denver, city outside of Denver, I guess, in the 70s.
I don't know anything about it. I've seen posters.
Well, it's color and it's black.
It's kind of it's 83 with the critics and 89 with the people. It's good. It's not great. It's just good. But it also you forgot about the 70s and like how kids raised themselves and just got into fights, like school fights, and they just kind of did their own thing and kind of looked out the brother, the sisters looking out for the brother, and it was very like. I was watching it with Sonny. It's like, oh, fight. It's a schoolyard fight. And one kid's beating the shit out of the other kid. And I'm like, yeah, that's how we used to roll. We'd get in a fight.
Like, subtle shit.
We had places. You know, when I was in junior high, the tunnel that went under the freeway.
That's so dystopian.
I know.
Ours was the bike rack.
That's out here a lot in LA. Yeah.
We had that tunnel that went under the freeway, and Ray was going to meet some ninth grader over there after school. Like
ninth grader. So he was older.
In fifth grade.
Okay, that makes more sense.
No, his claim to fame is he would in the seventh grade beat up seniors.
Oh, because you guys had seventh, eighth, ninth together.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah, we didn't have high school started in tenth, mm-hmm. And these were sanctioned bouts. I do some announcing work. We had the scorekeepers over there running the 10-point must system. And it was like, if everyone in the school knew the fight was going down, how come there wasn't any faculty or anybody from the school that would show up at the designated fight place?
They were too beleaguered. The school day was over as far as they were concerned.
They just stayed out of it. There was just fight. So the movie...
Did that not ring true to Sonny because he has no concept of that?
He has no concept. Nobody puts their hands on anybody. Their dad will sue the other family. So Black Phone is good. It's not great. It's just good. It's worth a watch. But they did that thing, and I didn't think about it, but Sonny looked at me, and he did the thing that I hate in movies, but I hate it in commercials as well. They made that there's two central characters, a few central characters, but you had the brother, who was sort of the central character, and then his sister, and they had the kind of abusive dad, and the mom killed themselves, and they were like looking out for one another. And then there was the kid's love interest, the girl he like had the crush on in the seventh grade, whatever he was in. But Sonny looked at me at some point and he goes, why did they make the two actresses look the same? The sister, because he'd get inside the class and then the other girl with the dark hair would like lean over and go, hey, you're late. And then your first poll, oh, that's his sister's in the class. And then it's like not like.
Which character am I looking at?
Make their hair a different color. Yeah. Would you please?
Different length, something.
There's no body features because they're 12
right.
per se and they're the same person. They're not doppelgangers. It's just confusing enough. I've seen them in so many commercials where, is that the person or is that the other person that just said the thing? Just break them apart.
No, you're right. If I can look at both of these pictures and say they would both be in final casting for Anne Frank, then they're too similar looking.
You're very right. They both could have played Anne Frank.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so it's a good enough movie. I know you guys saw Nope.
Yeah.
We did.
Independently.
Not together, yes. Yeah.
Interested, and that's the Jordan Peele film?
Yeah, the newest Jordan
Peele
movie.
The third movie from Jordan Peele.
The Get Out, Us, and Nope. And I watched Us the night before as a refresher.
Get Out. Everyone loved Get Out.
Get Out was
right?
a triumph.
Get and then was nominated for Best Picture.
And then Us was kind of a letdown.
Extremely.
Us was a true horror movie in a horror movie sense. I know all of Brian's problems with it because it's everyone's problems with it. And I reread all these things and it said, if you're thinking, you know, how did she do this and why couldn't she just do this? You're missing the point. It's an allegory. And I'm like, well, that's convenient.
Yeah, paint a picture next time.
So then Nope.
Making a goddamn movie for people to follow.
Nope is not a horror movie.
Nope is a thriller.
Yeah.
It's a thriller. And is Jordan Peterson going?
Peele,
sorry, different guy. Jordan Peele, is he going down the M. Night Shyamalan highway?
I'll give my opinion. Yeah. I will say M. Night painted himself into a corner early on by insisting on having twists in many of his films, almost all of his films early on, and that was hindering his ability to make good movies. He was beholden to this twist expectation. I think Jordan Peele, has a similar thing where I think he thinks people expect him to have some kind of societal message in his movies.
Yes.
Where it's like, hey, this Nope could have been just a taut 90-minute thriller and we all would have been interested in it. But I feel like he's trying to make some points and some societal commentary that's just – it's Emperor's New Clothes. It's just not there.
It's interesting. I kept kind of waiting for the movie to start an hour in because I was like, I was told this was a scary movie. And there are elements to it. There's a B plot that is so bone chilling. I wish
that
they would have
should have been the main story.
Absolutely. It will haunt your dreams, but it was 5% of the movie.
Well, I think renowned movie critic Richard Roper, who's going to join us post-haste, may have a different take on this film. So we'll talk to him about that. He's also reviewed the documentary series The Last Movie Stars, which is Paul Newman, Joanne Woodward series. Oh. So let me hit Solo Stove, and then we'll bring our old friend Richard Roper in. Solo Stove. The best moments happen around a roaring fire. I used mine on 4th of July, and let me tell you the dynamics of this thing, and you can go online and you can watch some videos of it. It works, man. And it's not through, you know, levers and pulleys. It's just that they put vents in the side. It draws the air in, and the fire just burns that much hotter. It's a smokeless fire pit, and it's made of stainless steel. It's a serious piece, and it's very portable, and it comes in a trap. You can put it in a travel case. And it regulates airflow to burn more efficiently. Little bit of smoke, ton of fire, easy to light with just a few bits of starter. Lifetime warranty, 30-day free return policy. It's Solo Stove, right, Dawson?
Right now, you can get big discounts on all fire pits during Solo Stove's summer sale. And use promo code Adam at solostove.com for an extra $10 off. That's solostove.com. Promo code Adam for $10 off on top of their incredible summer sale discounts.
All right, we'll talk to our good friend Richard Roper right after this. You own, you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Concrete here, which is also in my belly and in my glass here. Concrete, your body makes about half the creatine it needs. The other half comes from your diet, but most American diets are low in creatine-rich foods. Concrete patent creatine, HCL, is the favorite creatine of elite, well-informed athletes. The number one bioavailable creatine and the only microdosing creatine, just one small scoop per 100 pounds. So the container comes with a little scoop in it. And if you're 200, you put in two scoops. You do the math. Creatine is required for functional energy in every cell. And actually, stuff tastes good as well. Your brain uses about 20% of the creatine in your body. So it's important to think straight. Immune cells need it to protect you. Heart cells need it to pump. Lung cells need it to breathe. It's concrete, right, Dawson?
Take control of your health, both body and mind. Build a better you with Concrete. Register now at con-crete.com/podcast. That's con-crete.com/podcast for a chance to win a $500 Walmart Visa gift card. Available now online and in-store at Walmart. Concrete is truly life-changing and performance-enhancing.
For Nicaraguan Name That Movie with Adam's buddy Oswaldo. See if you can guess which movie this famous line is from.
All the gin joints in all the town, in all the world, she watching in my.
If you said Casablanca.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she walks into mine.
You're correct. Now, back to the show.
Film critic extraordinaire Richard Roper, an all-around good guy, Richard Roper, has joined us, I'm guessing, from Chicago. Screen Time with Roe and Roper. It's available. It's a podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. Good to see you, Richard.
Good to see you, Adam and team. And yes, greetings from Chicago, guys.
Was it just popped in my head, but when they spun off Three's Company into the Ropers series, that must have been good days for you when you were 15.
Or brutal.
Or brutal.
Yeah, it was more like when people would say, oh, Roper, like the Three's Company character, I would always just say, I don't know, I hear stupid people watch that show. I've never seen it, so yes. I wouldn't know what you're talking That's about. Good. I just went with that for years.
So we were just talking about Nope. It didn't move Brian and Gina. I haven't seen it. And then we can get into the last movie stars, and also I saw Black Phone. I don't know if you caught that one yet.
Yeah, I have. Let's talk a little bit about Nope. I heard what you guys said, and I hear where you're coming from. I think the M. Night Shyamalan comparisons are apt, but Shyamalan's first three films were great. And Jordan Peele, I believe he's actually starting a dialogue with his movies, because it's Get Out, Us, Nope. Like, they're all talking
right.
to each other.
Yeah.
What I liked about Nope was, first of all, it was shot with IMAX cameras and is meant to be seen on IMAX screens. It's a movie that it does have some heavy-handed social commentary, but it also has a love of movies. There are references to everything from The Shining to Shyamalan's Signs, to Ghostbusters, to, you know, certain TV shows from the 70s. I don't want to give all the pop culture references away. And you guys mentioned that side plot, which is about a 1990s television show, and the story that gets told kind of remind me of when Phoebe Cates tells the story in Gremlins about the Santa getting caught in the chimney and dying.
A little bit. You know,
exactly.
It's so dark.
It is.
It's so dark.
It is terrifying.
And horrific and blazingly original, I think. And I think he is also having fun. Again, we don't want to give too much away about what's up in the sky, but I think he's having fun with all these movies where they try it. Every alien always looks like a giant insect, right? Mm. And talks with a deep voice like this. They all have the same Darth Vader voice. So I think he's having fun with those tropes as well.
Find Chris now. We'll buy some time. You have to find Phoebe Cates explaining why she doesn't celebrate Christmas. Watch. Here's what they could have done. I'm no screenwriter, but I've written a few in my day. You ready?
Yeah.
You ask me, I'll be Phoebe Cates, so we don't stop the movie and bum everyone else.
Why don't you celebrate Christmas?
We're Jews. Anyway, what's Kazoo doing over there? Don't
Kazoo.
Get him wet. All right. We could have moved on.
Yeah.
No.
Stop down.
No, we had to stop down and explain why Phoebe Cates did not like Christmas.
But to your point about Nope, I, you know, after thinking about it and talking about it with my husband and reading about it, I thought, okay, I get it. I get that, you know, and tell me if you agree that it's kind of a commentary on how when society gets so desensitized of, you know, big events or trauma and then
predators,
tries to,
the predator thing
yeah,
comes back
and tries to profit off of it, you get burned.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely that, you know, kind of thing, because they talk about Kiki Palmer, I think, is great.
She's
playing
great.
The sister, you know,
yes.
Who's kind of this free spirit. And she's like, we're going to get rich off of this.
Yeah.
That's the first. And they get the tech guy to come out there and put all the cameras up and everything. They're not worried about, hey, this could be a threat to humanity.
Right.
Or this could be the end of days. They're like, we're going to get that Oprah moment, as they call it, and make $1 million, you know,
right.
and that's just the reality of it. But, you know, I think they even had a lot of fun with that, with, you know, with conspiracy theorists who will turn out to be right. And things like that. So I do think it's a movie that would resonate if you watch it again 2 or 3 years from now, as opposed to a lot of the films I sit through that I never will want to watch again.
Can let's bring everyone to a number. Let's just say it's Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know what Rotten Tomatoes has it at.
I can
high-ish,
tell you.
Yeah.
But what would
it's,
you?
It's 83 on Rotten Tomatoes. 83-ish.
And then where are the people? That's
the question. I think they're like 71.
And where would you guys have it? Sorry, Chris. Go ahead.
I was saying Brian is right.
Oh, okay.
I think 71 is definitely closer than 83.
Where would you put
it? Much like
at?
M. Night Shyamalan, Jordan Peele is a director with talent. He has individual moments in this movie. It doesn't come together for me ever right in the middle of 49, 51, something like that.
Where would you put it, Roper?
Oh, I've got it in the 90 percentile. And I think, you know, it becomes a double-edged sword when you become a director who I like to just call like an event director, where their movies become events. Because some of Shyamalan's lesser films, if we thought the director was an unknown 27-year-old, we'd be like, wow. But so many of the reviews say, well, it's not Unbreakable. It's not The Sixth Sense. It's not, you know, this or that. And that happens to all directors who have, kind of a unique style, where if they don't hit a home run, people are disappointed because their expectations are so high.
Well, I find myself just waiting for the next Quentin Tarantino movie.
Well, we're looking at two Tarantino posters over the shoulder of Richard Roper. That's Once Upon a Time back there, if I'm not mistaken, and that's Pulp Fiction.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the standard for me right now. I used to feel that way 20-some-odd years ago about Oliver Stone. I'd kind of wait for an Oliver Stone movie, and then he sort of syphilis ate his brain or something. I don't know. Maybe it was Agent Orange. I don't know, but something happened to Stone, and now I find myself just hanging around waiting for another Tarantino movie to come out.
I agree. And, Pulp Fiction is the easy pick as his greatest film, but I keep watching Once Upon a Time in Hollywood again and again and appreciating something. And I know, Adam, you'll dig this, and you do, I'm sure. But all the pop culture references there, like the radio ads are real radio ads from that time. And the billboards and the references to obscure films like The Illustrated Man, the Ray Bradbury movie. And it's just so layered. And what you see with Tarantino, you definitely see with Jordan Peele,
is their love of movies.
Yeah,
they just love everything about the richness of cinema.
Well, I grew up in L.A., and so it's like, for me, he's driving along the freeway, and the 80-do plumbing truck passes him. And, like, I remember the commercial, the guy going, 80-do, 80-do heating and plumbing. And, like, there's that truck. Like, and, you know, people would say, well, you know, I used to kind of say this when I was a carpenter, you know, they'd go, why do you need to do this little thing and that little thing? Wouldn't it be easier, faster, cheaper? And I'd go, yeah, but once you get to about 25 little things, it adds up. Mm-hmm. Like when you walk into the room, you can tell a room that's done well with all the little things that start to accumulate. And I feel that's definitely a Tarantino trait. Yes, Gina.
Great point. You know, that's like when I'm watching a film, I have, you know, I forgive certain continuity errors or if a song from 1972 is in a movie set in 1971. But as Adam just said, if it happens 14 times in a movie, then you're like, you know what? They didn't put the care into this. This is lazy, sloppy screenwriting and filmmaking.
Where do you have Black Phone? Tell us about that.
I love the Black Phone. I like the fact that it's set in a time period where, you know, you're using the phones on the wall. In fact, it's set right around the time that the first Halloween movie was coming out. And I think it's an homage to those late 70s horror films. And Ethan Hawke playing, we're going to talk about a little bit as a director, but playing the grabber, you know, this horrific monster who snatches kids off the streets and then imprisons them. And he's brilliant in it. And it's kind of a smaller role because it's really about the kids. But I love the way that film kind of uses the techniques, everything from the camera work to the special effects that are actually more of the time that it's set in than modern day.
It also shows you like how weird and gritty the 70s were. Like, it was just a nobody wore a helmet. People settled things with their fists. You know, parents smacked their kids. It was
simpler,
like
simpler times.
Just a kind of weird, funky, semi depressing, just kind of, I don't call it dark, but all the stuff they're talking about now, you know, all the Greta Thunbergs of the world and the Al Gores, it was going plenty strong in the 70s. We just called it ecology, but the world was ending.
Yeah.
Fossil fuels were going. The Soviets were sending nukes over. Like, it was some weird, bad kind of bummer of an era. And then we got into the late 70s and we're like, fuck it, let's do coke and crank up the Don Summers and get the fucking mirror ball. Someone invented a mirror ball. We're like, all right, fuck Vietnam. We're getting down. So
It was definitely a dark and strange time, and I think that movie captures all of that.
Just before we leap off of horror, because it's really not my genre, but I'm finding myself sort of having more fun watching it. Watch Seven again the other night. Watch Annihilation, Ex Machina the other night. I saw a trailer for something that I can find no information on, and I'm wondering if you have any inside info on Barbarian.
No.
Have you seen that trailer yet?
I don't know
if you saw it.
Oh, no.
Well, it looks really, really cool.
One of the things I actually have tried to do as a critic is avoid hype and trailers as much as I can.
Good luck.
One of the great things about getting to see the movies in it, well, you know, it's not easy, but one of the great advantages of getting to see the movies in advance is when they set up screenings for me, there are no trailers or no commercials. The movie just starts.
Right.
Yeah. So I can, in a lot of cases, like Black Phone, I'm going to know a little bit about it, but I really didn't know that much about it, which is the best way to see a movie. And I know you're right, almost impossible in this day and age.
Yeah. So, back to Tarantino, I saw Reservoir Dogs by just walking over to the movie theater. I had no idea what it was.
This isn't about dogs.
And then, or reservoirs. and then Pulp Fiction was a screening set up for K-Rock, I think. And me and Jimmy and Kevin and Bean just went to this little theater off of Sunset Boulevard, like a little screening room. Like, hey, after, you know, Richard with radio, it's like, all right, we finish at 10 in the morning.
Yeah.
I got the screening at noon. Mm-hmm. We're going to eat lunch and we're going to go over there. We just sat down like a free movie.
Yeah.
I don't know what this is about. And, you know, obviously we're blown away.
Well, to piggyback on both of your comments from earlier, what separates the good directors from great and the great from the greatest, Tarantino burst out of the gates with Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, and maybe stumbled a bit with Jackie Brown. It's debatable. But my point is, he found his way and is one of the greatest directors in the history of cinema, certainly the modern history of cinema, whereas a guy like M. Night Shyamalan maybe is a little more up and down. He has his moments and then he does it. And Jordan Peele will find out.
We have the clip from Gremlins, by the way, Rich.
Oh, great.
Which I've cited many times. It's worth a look and a listen as to why this is a comedy, it's sort of sci-fi comedy.
Yeah, like a fun
tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, right. Fun black comedy.
We're going to find out why Phoebe Cates doesn't like Christmas.
I was 9 years old. Me and Mom were decorating the tree, waiting for Dad to come home from work. A couple hours went by. Dad wasn't home. So Mom called the office.
Billy's effectively ignoring her.
Yes.
Christmas Day came and went, and still nothing. So the police began a search. 4 or 5 days went by. Neither one of us could eat or sleep. Everything was falling apart. It was snowing outside. The house was freezing, so I went to try to light up the fire.
No.
And that's when I noticed the smell. The firemen came and broke through the chimney top, and me and Mom were expecting them to pull out a dead cat or a bird, and instead they pulled out my father.
Gizmo shocked.
He was dressed in a Santa Claus suit.
Fucking pervert.
He'd been climbing down the chimney on Christmas Eve.
He didn't have
his arms loaded with presents. He was gonna surprise us. He slipped and broke his neck. Died instantly.
How do you know this?
And that's how I found out there was no Santa Claus.
This bitch is retired from acting. How get her back on the screen?
That's unreal.
I put it to the three of you that in 1984, for Best Supporting Actress, they could have played that clip at the Academy Awards. Yes, Phoebe Cates should have been nominated. They would have showed that clip right there.
Also, first off, not an appropriate response from her boyfriend, which should have been, get the fuck out of here.
Are you shitting me?
Are you fucking funny? First off, I used to do a little repointing work on bricks. A fireplace is not just one big opening. It has a flue. It has a flue and a fire shelf at the bottom. You can barely get your hand up there if you try to go load arms loaded with presents, number one. Spark arrestor on the top. I don't know how he got through that. I'm calling bullshit. But then imagine being with this person full time. Like she, at some point you'd go, hey, I'm going to get a chocolate bunny. Easter's coming up.
Oh, no.
Oh, shit. No.
I don't.
Okay. No, it's fine. Don't tell me why. I don't want to know.
I was 10 years old.
I don't. I fuck Easter. I'm not celebrating Easter.
She said she was going to hurry home.
I don't want to hear about what happened on Easter.
There was a fiery car wreck.
Fuck it. I'm moving on to Arbor Day.
Oh, I don't. I can't.
What happened on Arbor Day?
Oh, we were wandering through the forest.
Oh, shit.
I was 11 years old.
St. Patrick's Day.
No, I don't celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, fuck. Come on. What are you, Jehovah's Witness?
Oh, I don't interact with Jehovah's Witnesses. I was kidnapped by...
Okay. The 4th of July.
God, no.
Oh, fuck. We can't celebrate...
There was an explosion.
Oh, God damn it. We can't celebrate anything.
Let's play this dad's plan out for a second. It would have gone one of two ways. One, he successfully navigates the fireplace or the chimney, gets down the fireplace when everyone's asleep.
Nobody sees it. I always ask that.
Number two, he comes down once they all wake up and surprises them. They're like, hey, it's Santa. It's like, okay, it's very clearly you, Dad.
Also, I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but people don't own Santa suits. They rent them. Those fireplaces are filled with creosote. It's like this weird sap, resin, burn, black stuff. Oh, yeah. They have it's a fire hazard, which
makes sense.
If you don't clean your fire flue out every, 5 years, it could burst into flames if a spark goes up.
I got news from Mike Bishop.
You would not get your deposit back on the Santa outfit if you ran it through that filthy
chimney. There's a lot of holes in this story.
A lot of holes.
We're going to get the Netflix true crime series where it turns up
that mom staged it. It was a murder.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And
this
then
is
shoved
Dateline.
Him up the fireplace.
Yes.
But,
yes,
but exactly. Brian is 100% right. I've said it many times. There's a math. Either everyone's asleep and you do this needlessly.
Needlessly elaborate.
Or they're down there to enjoy it.
And you're
they
like, hey,
go,
surprise. Hey, like, dad. Dad.
Yeah. Anyway.
Can I ask Richard a question as long as we have him on? Richard, what has been, I have a choice. I'm wondering if yours is the same as mine or close to it. Your favorite movie you've seen so far this year?
I don't know. I don't really start looking at the whole year until the end of the year. So, I mean, there's been some good stuff out there. I don't have a choice yet for best of the year.
My favorite so far this year, I don't know, this may not be Oscar material, but the one I enjoyed the most and more importantly admired the most was Everything Everywhere All at Once. It was just so original and so fun and so kinetic and really, really made me happy that a movie like that was in the world.
I agree, except for
I
wouldn't end.
Agree more. It's,
I loved it, but it would not
original.
End. Yeah, but super original, and you know, I don't want to sound like Ted Nugent, but Top Gun was the funnest.
I agree.
Top Gun was fun.
All right, so Richard,
that was a blast.
It was awesome.
The docuseries, 6-part series, available now on HBO. The Last Movie Stars. Have you watched all 6? Have they put them all out at once?
I have.
And
yeah, I've seen.
What's
all
the
6.
Format of this?
It's really cool because we were just talking about Ethan Hawke, and he's the director of this. So the setup is that later in his life, Paul Newman was working on this huge autobiography, Warts and All. You know, and he was actually collaborating with Stuart Stern, who was the screenwriter for Rebel Without a Cause.
Wow.
You know, and they interviewed Newman, Joanne Woodward, Paul's first wife, his adult children, and all these directors that work with them compiled all these tapes. And then Paul Newman decided, you know what? I don't want to do this. I've got other things. I don't want to make this, you know, I don't want to go publicize this book that's all about me. So he put the kibosh on the project. And later on, one of his daughters found the tapes, and they had all been kind of destroyed or were beyond salvaging, but they had the transcripts of all the interviews. So Ethan Hawke goes through all the interviews, and then he enlists the help of all these great actors to read excerpts from the interview. So George Clooney is the voice of Paul Newman. Laura Linney is the voice of Joanne Woodward.
Oh, wow.
Vincent D'Onofrio, Billy Crudup. And what I like about this, guys, is we don't see these actors. We just hear their voices, and we see all those amazing archival footages and every footage. So we stop thinking that that's George Clooney doing Paul Newman. He's just reciting what Paul Newman said in a kind of interview style. And it's just incredible. It's, you know, a lot of great insights. It's Warts and All. You know, there's a lot of talk about his, you know, fairy tale 50-year marriage to Joanne Woodward, but they started as a couple for about 4 years while he was still married and had three children from his previous marriage. And that was very tough on his first wife. And also Joanne Woodward, who for a while was considered probably a better actor than Paul Newman, a better method actor. She won the Academy Award. She was doing all these great performances. And then she put her career on hold to raise the three stepchildren and their three children while Paul Newman became the biggest star in the world. And it's really fascinating to see, you know, the ascendancy of Paul Newman and be reminded of all these amazing performances he gave.
Any car racing crap in there so I can enjoy myself?
You know, I think they feel like a movie from about 2015 really covered that, a documentary.
You can't best it while you try.
So, yeah, I'll Google it.
Winning, yes, the racing life
winning.
Of Paul
so
Newman.
So they do touch on it, but, you know, that's just you know, to whet folks' appetites to see winning.
So
that's
it's
right.
Very enjoyable.
It's amazing. You know, when you think about what Paul Newman did, you know, from The Hustler and HUD and then Butch Cassidy and The Sting, all these amazing performances. And my favorite performance that he ever gave is in a movie called The Verdict that Sidney Lumet did, you know, a little bit later in his career, where he was challenged to act, because this was like, you're playing yourself in this movie. You're playing this guy who drinks too much and is too selfish, but has this, you know, great heart of a lion. And Newman, I think, gave, you know, just a brilliant performance. David Mamet wrote the screenplay for that. If people haven't seen The Verdict, it's incredible.
Oh, Mamet, yeah.
It's also interesting because, you know, when I think of Paul Newman or Robert Redford, and you think like, oh, yeah, you know, good for them. But you don't forget, like, they were white hot, blazing hot, scorching sex symbols. You know, when you see those old pictures and those old movies, you're like, damn, I get it now. You know, like George Clooney.
That's a great point.
There's like George Clooney is like, compared to like Paul Newman in his prime.
Yeah, insanely good. And, I think it worked against him early in his career, like it kind of did with Brad Pitt, where they don't get taken seriously until they hit about 50. We realize how great the craft was. But, think about those days, too, when we didn't have TikTok stars and all that other crap. So if you were a movie star, it was insane. The amount of fame and, you see this footage and the amount of paparazzi following Paul Newman everywhere he went for 20 years. And then, of course, there's this whole other chapter in his life where he's like, yeah, I'm going to make some salad dressing and some popcorn. And
it's going to
end up making about $500 million and it's all going to go to charity.
Right.
There was another guy, if I may, a good looking guy, wasn't taken seriously as an actor early in his career, speaking of this project. Ethan Hawke. Ethan Hawke is really coming to his own as a respected actor. But early on, he was Ethan Hawke.
He was a pretty
cool
boy.
He was cool. Cool name, cool face, all that stuff. He's a really good actor.
He was in that Generation X type stuff, with Reality Bites and movies like that, where you almost wanted to slap him.
Yes.
And he is so good. And what I love about it, too, about this film is he's got this huge enthusiasm for old Hollywood and this great respect. And it's sort of like when you hear an athlete who actually knows about the history of baseball or football and pays respect to that, instead of just saying, well, I've invented this sport. So seeing his enthusiasm for the acting and for just the legacy of Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward is really cool.
Is each episode an hour, or do they vary in length? Or
about an hour, and it's pretty chronological. A lot of these documentaries now, everybody wants to slip back and forth along the timeline, and then they bring in dramatic recreations. This is very straightforward. It's like, here's what happened in the 50s, 60s, 70s, all the way up until the end. And another great thing is when he shows a clip from a movie, we get 3 minutes of Cool Hand Luke instead of 12 seconds, like we do in a lot of these documentaries.
Yeah. Richard, thank you for joining us. The podcast is called Screen Time with Roe and Roper. It's available wherever you listen to finer podcasts. I'll see you soon, my friend. Hopefully in the flesh. We'll get out to Chicago, or you come out to L.A.
It's a deal. Great talking to you as always. Thanks, guys.
Richard Roper. All right. Let's see. I got...
I have some breaking news. Literally just this second. Very, very, very good news for the actor Tony Dow and the people who care about him. From the Washington Post, actor Tony Dow is still alive.
Yeah.
His family says his death was erroneously posted on Facebook page and confirmed by his manager. But the family says he's doing well.
Oh, good.
Oh, you brought him back to life by watching this show.
I thought I put a hex on him.
The manager better get fired.
We'll see if that's true.
All right. Well, very much alive. Bill Bellamy is in studio right after this.
All this month, stream the funniest films for free on Pluto TV. Watch comedy classics like Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and Mean Girls. Or drop in for a Tyler Perry marathon with a Madea family funeral and Madea's witness protection. Pluto TV also has hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows like Get Shorty, Be Cool, Key and Peele, Comedy in Color, and more. And no contracts, no subscriptions, no fees, no joke. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start laughing today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.